started like the girls, and turn was nearly broken. Had its anointed father, dear, I kissed me down and muttered and drank a pint of beer. Me grief and tears was smothered.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and thrilled to finally welcome one of our favorites on the show, Representative Stephanie Kifowit. You, I didn't pull up your numbers. What's the district you represent? I know so many other numbers, but that's not the one that I'm always at the top of my head.
My number is the 84th district, but more importantly, I represent Aurora, Naperville, Montgomery, and Oswego.
Right, because people who live in a district don't necessarily know what their district number is.
Most likely not.
Right? And I mean, do you hear from your constituents more in the last 2 or 3 years since the budget's been a little bit... wonky was the first year. Now it's... And then we would say crisis last year. Now we're in a budget catastrophe. Are you hearing more and more from the people in your district?
Well, I've always been an accessible state representative. Just like when I was an alderman, I was accessible. So I can say that the individuals are open to talk to me all the time, and mm-hmm. they continue to do that.
And you are someone that will stop and talk to anyone, whether they have a question or they have a point of view. Do you get people that are coming at you just both guns a-blazing with, you know, hostility or anger, frustration, which is kind of understandable, but at the same time, how do you deal with that?
Well, first and foremost, I believe everybody has their right to, you know, express their views to an elected official. And my vow has always been to be open and honest and communicate with people. And so sometimes I just have to sit on the phone for 20, 25 minutes and let it all come out. And then we can have a conversation. Sometimes we agree. Sometimes we disagree. But I acknowledge that.
Well, what has always impressed me the most is when I first met you in the spring of 2015. I actually met you during the Blackhawks playoffs. They were playing for the Stanley Cup, and I was trying to get to know as many legislators as possible. And of anyone that I met, you were the one that was, you know, everyone would kind of, you know, smile and nod, and that sounds terrible. I know that social services are suffering and the autism programs are being cut and things like that. And they would all kind of like, oh, you know, we'll do our best. But you would sit down with me and you went through all the numbers and you said, this is the struggle that we have. This is, you know, we're not trying to take from one, you know, one group to give it to another. We need to really figure out how to pay for these things. And that's what I've always appreciated. Is that how you've always been? Or does a little bit of that come from serving in the Marines, like being practical and knowing what you have in front of you and how to handle that?
Well, I can say I was a normal high school student, so mm-hmm. I was an average grade person. And then I did join the Marine Corps right after high school, which really does form a lot of your outlook the rest of your life.
Right.
But that also comes from after college, I was a registered financial advisor for many years.
Okay.
Looking at numbers, looking at people's portfolios, and it just naturally comes.
And so that's the thing. You're always looking at, yes, this is important, and also this is how we have to get there. And you work very hard toward veteran affairs. I know that Rob Martier has been talking about legislation today when it comes to the suicide rates against our veterans that are coming home. It's 22 veterans a day. And what are we doing in the state of Illinois to make sure we are paying attention, that we're informed and helping the men and women that come back from combat?
Well, first and foremost, elected officials that are veterans are on the lowest point since World War II. So out of 118 representatives in the House of Representatives, I believe there's about six veterans. I'm the only Marine. So
okay.
I say I'm the better one. So
yeah, it's a little competitive.
For the Marines. But
sure.
Last year we embarked on a statewide tour talking about veteran suicide with actual veterans instead of the shirts and ties and the people behind the door. We talked to veterans who told us that they tried to shoot their brains out or they thought about committing suicide and all the intricacies that come with a veteran who makes that final decision mm-hmm. that they no longer feel like they belong in this world, which is very tragic. And then we compiled it in a report that we presented last year. And then just out of the Veterans Affairs Committee was the legislation that is the companion to the report, which is about 13 action items that tells our veterans that last year was not just lip service. We're not just stringing you along. You know, the politicians like to put on chapstick and suck up to the veterans. We're not doing that under my watch. We're
right.
there for them. So it passed out of Veterans Affairs, and it will go hopefully for a vote on the full House next week.
And there's also legislation in regards to access to education, which is also important. I mean, we think about those dire moments when someone feels like they can't do anything. But there are steps along the way to put somebody on the path of like, this is, you know, there is meaning. There is more after coming home and more after serving my country.
There's an educational component, which is with regards to educational funding, MAP grants, you know, financial stresses can trigger a very depressing moment, which could lead to dire straits. But there's also a career readiness. Some veterans enjoy working with their hands a little bit more. The Helmets to Hard Hats program has been really great with the labor movement, with putting veterans outside in hardworking jobs, which keeps their mind active as well. And there's also a component through our agricultural with farming. And farming helps with our veterans, too. So there's a lot of components with education and with career readiness.
How much have these programs suffered in the last 2.5 years since we've been in this budget impasse? How much harder has that kind of outreach, that kind of dedication to our veterans been affected by our inability to have a budget in the state of Illinois?
Well, struggling veterans are a little bit, in my opinion, because I have that viewpoint, are a little bit more profound than struggling individuals because they've been through war. Mm-hmm. They've been through just traumatic events that even I didn't serve in a combat zone, so even I can't even really wrap my brain around, but I have a good idea. And so anything from a financial misstep to a claim denial to now, the Illinois has not funded the Illinois Veterans Grant for many, many years, and universities were able to absorb that. But the fact of the matter is that universities have been cut, 69% 2 years ago and another 40%. And now the governor's projecting another almost 30% cut. And the MAP grant was not funded last year. And a lot of people like to think that MAP grants are just for, you know, low-income students and struggling students. A lot of veterans get MAP grants. I myself got a MAP grant. And so a lot of veterans are now struggling with not having a MAP grant. A lot of universities cannot cover the Illinois Veterans Grant anymore, and if they drop out, they will find themselves in despair and alone. And then you couple that with the governor zeroing out, and we're not paying for mental health and addiction services, which a lot of veterans fall into those categories, too.
We're talking to Representative Stephanie Kifowit, and we're taking your calls, too. If you have any questions or comments about anything that comes up in the course of our show tonight, of course, we love having you join the conversation. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us. We'll be right back after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Illinois State Representative Stephanie Kifowit of the 84th Illinois House District. And that's up by the area is, what neighborhoods?
Mostly Aurora.
Mostly Aurora?
Naperville, as we go.
Parts of Naperville don't want to hear mostly Aurora.
Well, that's my district.
Because for them, they're also Naperville.
Naperville has quite a few reps, too.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. You know what? That's something that I don't think we've talked very much about. Can you explain to listeners how we determine the number, where the districts are, like how many representatives serve a certain area?
Well, the number of representatives set, mm-hmm. So it's always going to be 118. And it's set by population. So every district is about 109,000 residents.
Okay.
And every two reps have one senator.
All right. So that makes sense. So there are 118 reps. And so which means that there are 59 senators?
Well, close. 49.
49?
Yeah.
I can't do math anymore. Makes me tired.
Yeah. Now you got me thinking.
I know, right?
It's
past everyone's bedtime except for the people who are up listening to the show. We have gone for at the end of May, we will have hit 3 years without a budget in the state of Illinois. 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, Governor Rauner stood in front of the joint chambers and said that there was a grand compromise coming out of the Senate that would be, would hammer out a lot of these details, and he would not interfere. And then immediately he turned around and did the exact opposite. He had private meetings with senators. Some of these senators were also, what I've heard, allegedly have been coerced in some ways by the Illinois Policy Institute, being told that they would be primaried, and primaried means they would fund another candidate in order to push them out of office. So there are a lot of factors involved when it comes to getting things done in the state of Illinois, and people are suffering across the state of Illinois. There are important pieces of legislation that are coming across their desks that are being signed. And in particular, there was one that's important to families like mine, which was the autism identification card. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Correct. And my math was off. It's 59. My bad.
Oh, so, did I get it right?
Yeah, you got it right.
That never happens. Can you mark that for me, Lise? Patty was right at 11:24.
Because Patty's always up at 11:24 and I'm not.
It's all right. I trusted you.
What we did is this is what, in my opinion, government is all about. Government is about when a resident calls their representative and says, I have this concern and maybe you can help me fix it. And so I had a woman in my district, Lori Price, she's also the school board president of 204, call me up and said, my son has autism and he's learning to drive. And if my son gets pulled over by a police officer, it is not going to be pretty.
Right.
And so in a few other states, Florida being primarily, they have what's called, in Florida, it's called an autism awareness card, which is in a card that identifies certain traits, characteristics of individuals. In Illinois, it's called a disability awareness card because these traits could be prevalent in mental illness such as schizophrenia or people with epilepsy, not necessarily always autism, where they can't make eye contact or mm-hmm. they can't answer questions. In high-stress situations, they might get nervous. They might get agitated if somebody's too close to them, talking too loudly, talking too quickly. And the card lays out bullet points that relays just what I said. And on the back, it has an emergency contact number so that somebody could be called in case there is a miscommunication to de-escalate the situation. It is no surprise that Tom Dart says that he runs the largest mental health institution in the state of Illinois.
Which is?
The Cook County Jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is very, very possible that a lot of people started that might have undiagnosed mental illness or diagnosed mental illness, and they didn't know how to convey that to the officer. So through trainings, hopefully that officers will engage in, but also through parents working with their children. And groups, we had a lot of groups that are involved in this too, working with individuals with these disabilities. If they get pulled over or encountered with a police officer or paramedic, they hand over their ID or driver's license. And this autism awareness card is what I call it. The disability awareness card is what the legislation said that helps the officer or first responder understand the type of individual that they might be dealing with.
And this is where I know that our friend Representative Batnick, you know, he's very passionate about getting things done and getting into the numbers. And he has said, you know, I really want to, you know, maybe we just stop. We don't do any other legislation except for the budget. But something like this is necessary in an immediate way to so many different families. And that's why, you know, people are like, well, I don't know why they're not just working on the budget. That's all they should be doing all the time. And that's not practical, is it?
Well, we lose 22 veterans a day. Mm-hmm. So if we're not going to start moving forward on veteran suicide and issues that impact everybody's life, I know the budget is important, but we have to also focus on people's lives and issues that really affect them. And that's why the Disability Awareness Card is available now through the Secretary of State's office. If you have a disability on your driver's license, you can go to the Secretary of State's office and get the card at no cost. And that's why these recommendations from the task force to start stemming the tide and hopefully eliminating veteran suicide is important. Needs to be implemented, and hopefully we'll come up to a vote next week.
Excellent. We are talking to Representative Stephanie Kifowit of the 84th District. We're going to talk to her more after the news. We'll take a break right here. But 312-981-7200, if you have any questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. Right now, time for a break, and then the news with Rob.
Set sail at 1:30, looking for a new tomorrow.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It's not going to work to drink our sorrow away in the state of Illinois. There's work to be done, and we have Representative Stephanie Kifowit of the 84th District joining us. She has been working very hard over the last 2.5 years to come to a compromise with her fellow legislators on both sides of the aisle. This is not, you know, people think of this as strictly a Madigan versus Rauner sort of debate, a Rauner versus the state of Illinois. There are a lot of complex issues that legislative bill by legislative bill process that you guys have a debate. You argue with each other. Everyone's not lockstep with each other. And you're working for the state of Illinois, for the citizens here. We have a listener on the line with us who has a question. Hey, Dan, how are you doing? Dan?
Yes. Hello.
Hello. Where are you calling from?
Oh, my car. I'm on my way home.
Can you give us a, what part of the Chicagoland area or outside of Chicago?
I'm in Palatine.
Oh, excellent. What did you want to say?
Well, you mentioned about how Illinois policy would do what you called primarying to people.
Yes.
And I would I would assume that would be typically to a Republican candidate. And aren't most of the Republican candidates, don't they want term limits anyway?
Do they?
So why wouldn't they? Well, I don't know. From everything I read and stuff, it always sounds like the Republicans are always pushing term limits. Am I wrong? Or?
I think that, and I would say this from a sort of step back position. I think that anyone who has a job is going to be reluctant to eliminate their position and put a limit to it. They can say, the governor can say that because the governor has come and he ran on that saying that he, but without any ability to say, I'm going to convince everyone else to go along with me. I don't, you know, the Republicans can say that. They have never, as far as I can see from the 3 years I've been down there, have not actively done anything to make that possible. Go ahead, Representative.
Well, I think the clear view is Representative David Leach is a Republican, and he just stepped out of office after 30 years serving. So we have, you know, Leader Durkin has been there well over 20 years. Leader Redonio has been there well over 20 years.
All Republicans.
And they're Republican. And what I have been on record for is as a new representative, I've been there 4 years. Individuals like David Harris and Leader Durkin are just as important for me, knowledge-wise, as a new representative that I would like to lean on. So I would not compromise that function, because if you take away some of the leadership in the House of Representatives, then I, as a young representative of only 4 years, will only talk to the lobbyists who have been there for decades, or the bureaucrats who have been in state government for decades and they don't want to change anything. So you have to make sure that representatives can, one, properly represent their districts, and number two, have access to unbiased and factual information from their colleagues.
So then why does Rauner keep pushing the term limits if he, I mean, really, it sounds like none of them would go for it anyway.
That's a good question. Yeah, why does he, I don't know that we can say why he keeps pushing for it. Is it something that sounds good publicly?
It polls well, but as I've seen, like I said, I've been there only 4 years, and I would be very nervous as a newer rep to not have established knowledgeable people to go to on how to get a bill through, when a department head blocks a bill, when forces start coming at you at all different directions, and you don't have those seasoned reps that can advise where to go. Now, can we look at things such as long term? But the bottom line is, this is a government about the people, and you have to have a representative that has the skills to be able to represent the people.
Oh, I totally agree. That's what I was just wondering, because I always just thought most of the Republicans wanted that. And I was just going to say, well, then why don't they just do the right thing? If they wanted term limits, then let Illinois policy run a candidate against them.
Right.
At least they did the right thing.
Well, that's what I say. The good Lord put me into office, and when it's time for me to get out, the good Lord will take me out. I'm not as scared of a primary. I was in the Marines, so I always say, bring it on. So,
right.
Let's see what you got.
I'm always up for a good fight.
Well, thank you, Dan. We appreciate your phone call and look forward to hearing from you again.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Have a great night. Well, and people are fed up. They're frustrated that people, you know, legislators and the governor say one thing and then do another. I gave you the example of his budget address where he said he would not interfere in the compromise that was being worked on in the Senate, and then immediately basically left the chambers and did the exact opposite, had private meetings with people and said that I don't support this. And also the Illinois Policy Institute influenced legislators on the Republican side of the aisle. You know, but people are suffering in tangible, immediate ways. And there's been a lot of talk about how, well, businesses are going to leave. And, you know, there's huge migration. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, like I said, I've only been in the House of Representatives 4 years. I'm just starting my third term. And every bill, every issue I hear, the sky is going to fall. The world's going to end.
Right.
Depending on the bill, the subject matter, the point in time. So I think the state of Illinois is extremely strong when it comes to our business climate, when it comes to our infrastructure, when it comes to, I mean, we just, as a matter of fact, the state just reversed their December numbers. They claim that there's a huge 16,000 job loss in December, and they've just come back and reversed that to say we had 2,000 job in the positive side, mm-hmm. and then another over 1,000 jobs in January on the plus side. So we are still have a good, strong economic engine. We're just sputtering along a little bit. So we have some additives in our gasoline that's just not working, and we need to fix the engine and get the car going again.
But Governor Rauner has said that when you do anything, Representative Kifowit, you need to first think how it affects job creators. That's the only thing you should think about. And he said that. I have that written down, quoting him. Any piece of legislation that you guys work on, you must think first, how does that affect job creators? Is that really how you approach legislation? Is that really practical and humane?
Well, my goal is helping veterans not commit suicide. So if it does infringe on a job creator, then I'm not going to be sad about that. I think there needs to be balance.
Yes.
And you cannot say we are going to look at everything 100% job creator, because if we do that, then we will cause irreparable harm to various aspects if we just let government go on or just let business go unchecked. So, I mean, government is a check and balance. And, you know, at the end of the day, the governor just has to do his job. Mm-hmm. He's the governor of the whole state of Illinois, and he needs to realize that for every single governor except for him, we've had a budget.
Every single time
except for him. Now, you can complain about past budgets being out of balance. That's fine. And there have been issues, but we've had a budget. And his argument that he's not going to do a budget is like somebody saying, well, I'm not going to pay my monthly credit card bill because I can't pay off the whole balance. It doesn't make any sense.
Or I don't like the structure of the billing system.
Right.
Can we take this call before we go to break? We've got Roseanne from Berwyn. Hi, Roseanne. What's your question?
Yes. I'm just wondering why, you know, state, I mean, Bintha employees, pensions are totally tax-free. I should think that, you know, if you earned over a certain amount, that should be taxable.
If you earn under a certain amount, that should be taxable?
Yes. I mean, you know, if these people are making $150,000, $2,000 a year, you know, in pension, you know, payments, I mean, receiving that amount of pension every year, why shouldn't they be, made to pay on part of that?
What do you think, Rip?
Well, I think there should be a limit on what's, you know, tax-free.
Well, the issue is that the state of Illinois is one of the only states with a flat tax. So we can't divest on lower incomes or higher incomes. We're just always flat. So we don't have the capabilities to do that. I personally believe that, you know, people who are retirement, they're on fixed incomes. You know, they do need some breaks. The average pensioner only makes about $48,000 a year. And so I do believe that our retired folks do need a little bit of break. And we're one of only few states that allow retirement income to be tax-free.
Thank you so much for your call, Roseanne. And one more thing before we go to the break. We have a text that we were talking about term limits, and they are asking, what about leaders? Like, what about Madigan? You know, is there term limits for leaders, perhaps Speaker Madigan, President Cullerton, any of the other leaders in the House and Senate?
Well, I think that it's a interesting article. Everybody wants to talk about it. But the bottom line is the leadership works for the membership, mm-hmm. works for the representatives. And there are a lot of things that we do, a lot of bills that we work with the leadership. So if we feel that there should be another leader, we would. The bottom line is we need to make sure that we have a balanced budget, and we need to focus on a balanced budget and to make sure that we start getting the state of Illinois in the right direction.
Thank you so much, Representative Kifowit. You're staying. I'm not letting you go. I have pizza. I have cookies. I have all kinds of stuff. Your daughter is, cringing in the corner because I've now drawn attention to her. We're going to have our friends Kelsey Huff and Derek, who have a new web series. Actually, I think it's their second season of their web series. We want to hear more about that when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Representative Kifowit, I've brought her all kinds of treats, so I'm going to let her eat. You join in the conversation anytime you want, by the way. You're here for the duration, just so you know. I've locked the doors. You're not allowed to leave. Also joining us in the studio is Kelsey Huff. It's been so long.
I've missed you so much.
I hear you. Like, when you're on with Jen Bosworth, I'm like, I have to have her back on my show, too. I get jealous.
I like it.
Jealousy. Why is she on with Jen? I wanted to have her on my show. And you've brought friends. You've brought Jason and Daryl in studio with us.
Yeah.
Jason, ding, 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 first person to ever come on the show and know what I've heard it both ways means.
Yes.
And what's in reference to.
It's in reference to Psych.
Have you seen every episode of Psych?
Probably.
I've never seen the last season. I have them all. This is a little, Esmeralda knows this about me. I don't watch the end of a series. I don't like to know that, I don't like to say goodbye.
That's very smart.
Right? So, because that means it's over, right?
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Now that I have like that whole last season, like it still lives.
It can never die.
It can't die. Yep. So I cannot. So
I do the same thing with Dr. Brule. I won't finish it.
It's true.
What's Dr. Brule?
Dr. Brule is a weird show that if you're going to go down a dark hole if you watch it. But I never ever watch the end because of the same feeling. You're in my brain, Patty.
Dr. Brule.
Yeah.
If you want to Google that, it's weird.
Dara?
If you don't watch any of the shows, Breaking Bad actually ends with a musical number. He gives up his wicked ways.
How did you know that? I've only seen the pilot episode of Breaking Bad, but that's a different story for a different night.
It's a really happy show.
It seems that
things
way.
Things go well.
I have a son with special needs, and my dad died of lung cancer. Can you guess why I didn't want to watch the rest of the series?
We got it. You nailed it. You need a musical in your life, is what you're saying.
Psych.
I know. See what I'm saying? And I think in the last season, they have a musical number, don't they?
Oh, they love the
they
music.
Do. Yeah,
yes.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys have a series. I saw you post about. I see you post a lot of things. I'm like, I have to have Kelsey back, and then I'm like, that's it. I'm having Kelsey on now for the open mic series, series.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about this.
Yeah. So here's the deal. So Daryl and I co-wrote this bad boy, and we're also co-stars because we have huge egos. And what it is, it's featuring a lot of Chicago comedians, and it's based on two folks who are trying to be successful in Chicago comedy, as we know.
And we know how that goes.
And it's all about failure. Failing. And Jason over here, he directed and edited this bad boy as well. So it's 10 episodes.
Okay, so how do you go through 10 like hours and hours of stand-up comics and their material? I mean, do you edit them to look good, or is that not a concern?
In some cases, yeah. There's a lot of bad comedy at open mics.
It's an open mic.
Yes.
So, I wasn't too worried about making them look good.
They succeeded on that on their very own.
Oh, yeah. And we really do push the failing element of it, for sure. Well, it's very awkward.
We're also really good at selling this show.
Yes.
It's awful. No, oh, my God.
But it's like enduring. You know how it... I mean, Patty, you know your stand-up. You know how it goes. Well, when you bite it, there's something beautiful in it.
Well, the awkwardness and the misery of something like Curb Your Enthusiasm, people seem to be drawn to that awkwardness.
Yeah.
True.
You know, like the possibility of everything's going to go wrong.
Everything's going to go wrong.
Isn't that what they call it?
They do indeed. And you said it right.
I know.
I always mess it up.
How do you say it? Because now I'm worried.
No, you're doing it right. I try to make it sound fancy in German, like Schadenfreude, and then it sounds so stupid.
That sounds really good. I like that.
That sounds right to me.
I just sound like a Swedish chef, like a Muppet.
Well, now, Daryl, where are you from?
Well, I live in Chicago. I mean, yes. For like 15 years. I'm from Iowa. Okay. Though, as most great comics are.
That was Johnny Carson from Nebraska. Carry on.
There's a couple out there. They left.
Jake Johansson?
They left
no, also Nebraska. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You're really hitting Nebraska hard.
I know.
Tom Arnold is from Iowa. Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
So where are you from, Jason?
Ooh!
That loose meat shop that they opened up over there. Do you remember when they, like, Roseanne and Tom Arnold were very excited because they were opening up the loose meat shops. That was like their big thing.
Just right. Hot dogs rolling around on the floor.
I know. What is
yum, yum.
Loose
what
meat.
Is
I've been
loose meat shop?
I've been led to believe that loose meat is a big thing in Iowa.
Daryl, comments?
I'm not 100% sure what that means, and so I refuse to comment.
He's hiding something.
He's hiding that, loose meat.
Sounds... I know. Now I have to Google and see if I've heard it both ways. Jason, where are you from originally?
I was born in Detroit and moved out here, but I live in Chicago. I'm married to Kelsey.
What? I know.
I'm sorry. How many times did I just blink there? I was like,
nobody
can't.
Knows I'm married, and he's real.
You're married?
Yeah, for like years.
How many?
It'll be 5 years next month.
Yeah.
This is
secret
not...
marriage.
Kelsey Huff?
Yep.
Married.
If I wasn't Facebook friends with her at the time, I wouldn't know. I remember I looked at my wife and said, I think Kelsey just got married. There's a picture. Yeah, I swear to God, it's a wedding picture. And yeah,
okay, so you're like me, though. Like, I never post pictures of my husband at all. So I had somebody like, I don't wear a wedding ring. Do you wear a wedding ring?
I do.
Oh, see? Never mind.
But
that.
It's like, whoop, whoop, whoop. Yeah, I'm real fast. This is a great visual for this audio medium.
We're live streaming. You can
oh,
see
yeah, that's right.
WGNradio.com. You can see her rock on her finger.
For those of you listening at home, Kelsey's waving her hands madly.
Wow, you sound great in this, Daryl.
Yeah, he's good. He's good play-by-play. Also, okay, so loose meat sandwich. It's an Iowa loose meat sandwich. It's a tavern sandwich originally consisting of unseasoned ground beef on a bun mixed with sautéed onions and sometimes topped with pickles, ketchup, and mustard.
Well, there you go.
According to Wikipedia.
Oh, it's a made right. Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood the terminology.
There's another name for it?
Yes,
it's
now
a franchise,
that I know what
right?
we're talking about. Yes, I've had more than a few.
A made right? Because it sounds like it's, you know.
That's a great name for
it. It is. Also known as a made right sandwich.
Wow. Wow.
Thank you.
Isn't there a made right in Springfield, Representative? Give away. There's a. Because in Springfield, they eat horseshoes.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, which is not okay. I mean, it's wonderful.
Horseshoes, not like, I'm assuming not like the game.
No, it is a Texas toast with a slab of meat, fries, a gravy, or cheese on top of it.
Yum.
Is that accurate?
It's clogging arteries of all the representatives in the House of Illinois.
Oh,
right
no.
Now.
That
you
explains
need
a lot, actually. That explains a lot.
Moon, burn!
Government burn.
Government burn. Jeez. Yeah. We need all the views we can get, Daryl.
I retract my statement. I apologize on behalf of everyone here.
Yeah, that was made wrong. Up
What happened?
That was it. Yeah.
Now you have to have a Girl Scout cookie, by the way, because I have 30,000 boxes in my office. So I have the Thin Mints are in the freezer, and I've been told that's the only
way.
That's the only way to do them. I don't know that that's. I've been a Thin Mint girl from way back.
You don't do a freeze. You don't freeze them.
Well, remember when they told you to put Charleston shoes in the freezer and it just breaks?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Those are good.
That one guttural. That oh yeah.
By the way, I've heard take a scoop of ice cream, put it between two Thin Mints, so just like one scoop, Thin Mint on each side. Eat that.
Oh yeah, no, that seems great. That seems amazing.
Yeah, I don't think they're as hard as the Charleston chew. They do like a little. There's a little crisp.
A little snap.
A little snap.
Let's find out during the news because I have more Thin Mints in the freezer.
We'll do it.
I have a whole roll of them. So I was asking. So your series, the Open Mic, which is available. Where can people see this?
You can see it on our website, which is the openmicseries.com, or YouTube. That's where we're becoming famous on YouTube. And then we're also on Facebook. We're on Twitter, and we pump that stuff all, as you know, all over the place.
And this is your second season?
This is our very, very, very first season.
Oh,
and we're launching them every Tuesday.
Okay,
so we have 10 episodes all together. We are currently on episode 3.
Okay.
Oh, and the next one's real good.
Good one coming up.
Oh, watch out.
I'm trying to figure out how this affects your relationship at home. I'm going to ask you about that when we come back. Because if you're editing the entire series, I just want to know. I'm going to make Kelsey look especially good in this episode. I'm just curious. More bad.
I'll try and think.
Yeah,
of something. If she's
I am. If she's like nagging you about the dish, and you're like, yeah, that's it. Let's see how this edit goes. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Representative Stephanie Kifowit. I just shared with you some of the behind-the-scenes moments that we have here on the show once in a while. We won't encourage him. We'll just hang up on that. I don't know how to... There we go. Can you hang up on him? Do you... You know, one of the guests in the studio said that's probably like one of your town hall meetings that you have. Do you have crazies that come up to you? I believe it was Kelsey that said that's nothing she hasn't heard before.
Oh, I've heard a lot. Yeah. I've definitely heard
You're a
lot.
Marine. You've heard a lot of things.
Yeah, and it doesn't... Nothing really bothers me.
Nothing phases you?
No, it really doesn't.
Also joining us in studio are Jason. I did not get your last name. Only
Medea.
Medea? Really? Is that real or did you pick that one? That's a fantastic name.
You did not get to choose.
You were absent that day of choosing.
It passed me up.
And originally from Detroit,
mm-hmm.
Moved here for what reason? What drew you here?
I was like 10 years old when my dad got a job.
That'll do it.
Down here and moved the whole family out.
Was it a kind of a shock for you coming from Detroit to Chicago? Was it?
Yes, I was. I remember crying a lot, but I got Nintendo to cheer me up.
I'm saying there are ways to soothe the pain, and Nintendo will go a long way for that. What was your go-to game at the time? What was a young Jason playing?
Oh, Super Mario Brothers 2,
sure.
I think.
What is current Jason playing is the real question.
Video games are fun. Come on.
No Zelda in your rotation?
Zelda's pretty good.
Zelda.
Switch.
And Daryl, you said you were originally from Iowa. What brought you to Chicago?
Well, my dad was in the Army, so I grew up a lot of places. High school and college was Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And the University of Northern Iowa decided to be best if we saw other people.
Oh, parted ways. Okay,
yeah,
sure.
It was a rough breakup. And obviously, we both moved on. Mm-hmm. They have a fine degree program, and I'm very broke, so we're doing well. I moved here because I was 25, and there's an unwritten law in the Midwest that if you live within 600 miles, you have to go to Chicago at some point.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I'm glad. Where did you land first? Right in the city or in the suburbs?
Two blocks from Wrigley Field. Again, state law requires. And after 2 years of the nonstop frat party, me and my roommate said, we got to go somewhere.
Yeah, this strong smell of urine in the summertime is really, there have to be some choices around this.
Well, coming from Des Moines, I lived halfway between Wrigley Field and North Halsted Street. Mm-hmm. So it was a different world for me.
A little bit.
I loved it. I mean, it was a great place, but it was definitely like, wow, you walk a block and a half in either direction. Those are two very different parties going on.
No doubt about it.
I could go to the Kit Kat or I could go to the Cubby Bear. Let's party, baby.
I kind of love the diversity there. No doubt about it. And yeah. Kelsey, where are you from originally? I know we've talked about this before, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, the very glamorous Richmond, Illinois, right on the border of Wisconsin.
Mm.
Yeah, I grew up on a farm. And then I moved here right for college, went to Columbia, and that was that.
And how did your parents feel about you moving to Chicago?
You know what? I moved when I was 18, and I didn't ask. I just left.
Sounds like Representative Kiffewich.
I joined the Marines.
That's how she joined the Marines.
Ask her, tell my folks or nothing.
Yeah, I did the same thing with art school. Maybe not the best path, but you know, you're very successful. Whatever.
We all have our
we'll
journey.
Have our paths.
Yes, it's about the journey, the destiny. What is it about? I can't remember.
It's about something.
Yeah,
who cares?
It's not about the destination.
It's not about the destination. Journey. Yeah, I don't know what the destination is anymore. So I can't be about the destination.
We're all on a journey.
Yes, destined.
Yeah, it's all a big surprise. So your new series, The Open Mic, is on YouTube on your website. The Open Mic or Open Mic?
Yeah, it's The Open Mic series. Yeah, but it'll pop up when you put it on there. Yeah.
So Google that. Find that.
Google that action. Watch it a couple times.
And what's the reaction you're getting from people?
You know, really positive so far. We had a debate because you were like, it's YouTube. And I don't know if you guys know, but the internet filled with hate. And we were like, oh, maybe we will just like disable the comment section because there's also we feature a lot of women, a lot of funny women. And I'm sure, also extra hate on the internet. So far, really positive.
Oh, good.
Now that I just opened that gate.
Yeah, don't tempt it. Yeah, why are you tempting that?
Code Brown's everywhere.
Why are you tickling the monster? You're like,
I really punched that monster right in the stomach. Come at me, haters! Don't, because I'm very sensitive.
And Jason's like, if you're going to hate something, I just edited this. And then like, I can only work with what I'm given at this point. So how do you shoot the series? What open mic, either one of you, Daryl, Jason, Daryl, Kelsey's turning to you.
Well, it was Daryl's idea originally to do it, and he and Kelsey wrote all the scripts, and then we shot it over 3 weekends in November, got up very early, it started at 5 a.m.
God, comics getting up at 5 a.m.?
It was a risk.
You mean still up?
Yeah.
I mean, just like start at 5 a.m.
Yeah, sure.
And they showed up.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Oh, you tell us there's a camera. We're like, what?
Yeah. Attention.
Yeah.
And we shot it at Gallery Cabaret, and they were amazing.
You know,
Gallery
so cool.
Cabaret has so many open mics, and they're there. They're like the last bastion of, like, it's not a sports bar. They are there to support local artists. And they were amazing. They didn't charge us. I never even met Mike face-to-face. We do an open mic there called The Riff every Monday, and he's like, show up, whatever. We'll have a guy there. Do what you got to do. They were amazing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And how many now? Is it a single camera? Are you just kind of, is it a run and gun kind of a thing?
Yeah, we had two cameras going most of the time. But yeah, we had a very strict shot list, and we have very little room to wiggle just because we did not have a lot. And 10 episodes was way too much to try and fit into 3 weeks. Amazing we did it.
Like I called Kelsey to talk about this idea that I had and setting it up and doing it with her. My original thought was, oh, I'll just have my little handy cam. I'll film it. It'll start Kelsey. It'll be fun. It'll be
dorbs.
Quick and dirty. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then
reminds me of college. Go ahead.
Right. 2 years later,
yeah.
I mean, it's a real production. On
really?
Set. Yeah. I mean, Jason's like an actual director as opposed to me would be an idiot with a camera. We had an assistant director. We had lights people. We had sound. I mean, it was great. It was a real shoot. And it looks professional. It's really good.
So 2 years in the making. So you come up with the idea. You call Kelsey and Jason. You're like, this is my idea. And then but you wanted to make sure that, I mean, is there research that goes into it to figure out, like, how are we going to first shoot it, write it, create it? And then is there also an idea of, like, how are we going to market this? What's our end goal here? What's the destination?
Oh.
It was mostly panic.
Yeah.
That sounds like the House of Representatives. Go ahead.
We're all connected in this room.
Yeah, I mean, as far as marketing, Kelsey kind of carried the torch on that since she has a very good network of people from her comedy past.
I think another thing that we did was that we really wanted to like focus on community, right? So all of our extras, there are a lot of the students that I taught, there's a lot of women, there's a lot of even the crew, a lot of gals. So we're really sort of connected into everybody that's worked it. It seems so, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, so connected and proud of it. Like everybody's helping us out. So there's this real like grassroots thing, which is what I love about Chicago.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, one of those things, it's like we're all in this together. If we sink or swim,
let's do it. You know what I mean? So,
and is the series, and Daryl, is a series following the lives of the particular open micers, or is it the shows themselves? What is the path of an episode?
Well, it's sort of the whole 10 episodes. It follows Daryl and Kelsey, really, which we cleverly name the characters Daryl Moon and Kelsey Hough.
It helps on the set.
Yeah, who?
Moon,
yeah.
Moon is my last name.
Moon.
M-O-Moon. Moon. So, exactly. That spells Moon. Thank you. Nice. The Stand. We got
The Stand, baby.
This is amazing. So the story arc kind of follows us and like our dealing with each other. But each episode, we try to focus on a different comic. So it's that, you know, the different comics you see at an open mic. The guy who tells the same 5-minute joke, the same 5-minute set every single time for years in a row, which I've met that guy like 500 times.
Oh, so, sure.
You know, that's sort
open micer, headliners. We're, you know, I mean, like,
the line blur.
Please.
We also focus on like the feedback, so not just like the comics, but like how to interact with the comics. So the guy who comes to the open mic and is like, I'm gonna tell you how to do it. I got a joke for you. I'm gonna tell you exactly.
And hi, John Roy. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, Zing. But when we shot that part on set, you could, because there's most of the extras were all comics, and you could just feel everybody tighten up in that scene because everybody's experienced that thing. That was pretty great. Yeah.
There's a comic who will not only give you a line or how to do the joke, but when you're on stage doing it, he'll go around. I wrote that. I told her to do it that way. That's always my
boo. Sorry, I just boo. I don't know who he is, but I know who he is. You know what I mean?
You do know. I just said who he was.
There's more.
Pulling punches on that. That was the same guy. It's the guy will walk into the room and tell you, he opened for me. He opened for me. He sucks. She sucks. Okay, but take it down a notch. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing about comics. It's like any other industry. There are so many different personalities. There are the archetypes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's the ones that are just in it to get famous. There are the people who really, like, obsess over a punchline. The ones that just do the same thing over and over. There's so many different people.
Yeah. I mean, you're just nailing it. You're actually, so we have like an out of town, like somebody who comes back to Chicago and is a real jerk, the Fame episode, right? We have someone who's like filled with anxiety and like never ever gets on the stage because they're just like freaking out the whole time. Yeah, we have all of these folks that you see.
Yeah.
And Jason, I think, did a really good job of making it so it's not super insidery.
Right.
So focusing on things like anxiety, where Daryl and I were just like, everybody will know who these jokers are. And Jason's like, well, what about the public?
Yeah. How about we make this accessible to everybody?
Yeah.
Well, I want to come back and have you guys on again as the series goes on, and I want to hear more about what the reaction is. So all the episodes are shot, and you're dropping them every Tuesday.
Tuesday
on theopenmic.com, and you can also go to YouTube and find it there.
Yeah, it's the Open Mic series. Yeah, exactly.
Series.
You'll find it. Or find us on Facebook.
You have
listen, we're everywhere.
You
just
are.
Google the Open Mic series Kelsey Hough. It'll get you there. It'll get you there.
I'll bet you if you type in Kelsey Hough, you're going to get it too. It's probably the first thing that comes up. Jason, before you go, is there anything that people don't know about Kelsey that you want to share with us?
Can it.
Yeah.
No.
Well, she's married. That's probably.
See? We didn't know, and we appreciate that. Thank you so much, Jason. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Too.
Look forward to having you back. I've heard it both ways. Have a great night, Daryl. It's also a pleasure to meet Daryl.
Thank
right?
you. Yes. Daryl
did.
Yeah.
I had it all wrong. Kelsey, come back again soon.
I will. I love.
All right. By the way, there's Kevin Bozeman on my television. Everything got weird. More with our Freak Out Friday when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Illinois State Representative Stephanie Kipowitz of the 84th District, encompassing a lot of Aurora. All of Aurora or most of Aurora?
No. A third of Aurora.
A third of Aurora.
Aurora's pretty
parts
big.
Of Naperville. I don't want to, like, you know, pick people out. You, not you, in Naperville, you in Aurora. We've been talking a little bit about state politics, and joining us for our Freak Out Friday is the president of Aileron Communications, Dave Lundy. Have you promoted yourself yet to CEO or no?
Nope, not yet. No, sorry.
And with Fulcrum, and also political strategist, is Eric Elk in studio with us, and sent me a list of things. I don't know what to get to first. I don't know if we even do the fact that Donald Trump in the photo op in front of the fireplace where he is shaking hands with every single other world leader, refused
male
to shake hands.
Leader.
Yes. Do you think that's what it was? Is that it was? Or,
I think
or,
it's partially about that Angela Merkel is a female and that Donald Trump is a misogynist pig.
Well, could it also be that she sniped at him a little bit when they had a joint press conference?
Sure I'm sure she sniped at him. But, you know, I mean, on the campaign trail, Donald Trump spent much of 2016 telling everybody that Angela Merkel was the world's worst leader because she made her country into a bastion for terrorists and was personally quite hateful towards her. She was willing to shake his hands because you know what? You this is what you're supposed to do. This is one of our top allies in the world.
Right.
And here we go again, attacking an ally. Still haven't heard him say a bad word about Vladimir Putin.
No, and that's something that I think is...
Bet he would have shaken Vlad's hand.
Well, and that's what was so surreal yesterday, watching that press conference with Sean Spicer. And like,
oh, my God.
He was. Am I wrong? He was trying to gaslight a room of journalists when they were asking him, you know, is the White House going to have any comment on...
I have never seen anything like that in my life. And I've watched a lot of these pressers in the White House with press secretaries going back decades, and I've never seen literally Jonathan Carl was asking one question, and Spicy was like all, you know, jazzed up. He had taken his extra adrenaline shots before he got out there, and it was like he was channeling Melissa McCarthy. I was waiting for him to take the podium and jam it up Jonathan Carl. And when he started reading for like 10 minutes, just yes. sort of reading these articles.
When you're citing all these, like even like talk show hosts. I mean, right. Well, if I come up in a press conference, you know things have gone terribly wrong, everyone. He made the brilliant
decision to end that stream of articles by quoting Sean Hannity.
Yeah.
And all the media knew, are you really quoting Sean Hannity when we're quoting the chair and the ranking member of the House and Senate Intelligence mm-hmm. Committees? Wait. And you're giving me Sean Hannity in response?
Well, and that's the thing, Eric. Do you think that the GOP, I mean, they don't want to be sort of like tied to these allegations when it comes to Russia. And John McCain and a lot of other people in the GOP are calling for information. You know, if
Senator
you,
Byrd did, I mean, yeah. on Intel Committee, I mean, basically said there's no there.
Right.
You know, and as it relates to Spicer, I think, you know, look, he's had and that's the interesting thing is he's had a relationship with all these reporters for years. I mean, he was the RNC as the comms director. And now the way that this has changed that relationship with the media, it's clearly I think that's an indication of what his boss, what the president is pushing. I mean, clearly the president is really pushing him to tack or I shouldn't say tack hard, but attack hard.
Yeah. He came after the reporters hard yesterday.
I mean, because his relationship with them previously was one where it was a good back and forth.
Oh, this is not a bad...
No. He's definitely on the attack.
Representative Kiffaway, did you see this? It looked like he was trying to prove to his high school debate teacher that he had been like participating. If you don't have a good argument, just attack your opponent. I mean...
You always have to have a level of professionalism. And you know, as much as... We like the press. The press is a checks and balance and should be a fact-finding body. So it's a very, very important part of government. It's just unprofessional.
Well, and the fact that, you know, people are talking about this bizarre situation we are in with Russia. I mean, I had someone last night say, we shouldn't even worry about Russia. They're not a threat to the United States. They're poor. You know, they don't have a lot of money. So it's not like we should be worried about an attack from, this is what I was saying. It was Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune was like, please.
Scott said that.
I can pull the audio.
Sorry I wasn't here.
I know. I was like, if anything, that makes them more of a threat because they got nothing right. to lose, and they will throw caution to the wind.
Yeah, because it's all ego.
Well, they're out to steal oil. I mean, like, they want a path to have more access to oil.
And they want to disrupt the European governments, and that's why they're disrupting the European elections the way they disrupted our elections. I mean, look, there's so much that hits us on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to kind of discern the important stuff from the unimportant stuff. So one of the little factoids that came out this week was Roger Stone, Donald Trump's crazy advisor, came out, and it turns out that not only was he in direct contact with Guccifer 2.0, the Russian hacker,
mm-hmm.
he was in direct contact with him 16 times during the election. And this is, so every time I hear Roebling or one of my right-wing friends say, hey, there's no evidence there was any discussion between Trump people and the hackers, I'm like, yeah, there is. You're just not paying attention. So
it is absolutely absurd to dismiss the threat that we have right now.
Well, look what happened with Yahoo. I mean, in the indictment, in the indictments this week. I mean, clearly, if there's something to this Roger Stone issue, that will come out, you know, once they start to prosecute this issue or, you know, this case.
And the Flynn issue, because it also came out this week that Flynn got was paid not just by RT, the Russian propaganda.
The speeches he was giving to Russian television, which is actually propped up by the Russian government.
Well, it's a Russian propaganda arm. But in addition to RT, there were two other Russian entities that paid him tens of thousands of dollars. So this is a man who Donald Trump decided should be the national security advisor, who had received almost $100,000 the year before from Russia. And people still wonder, well, why doesn't Donald Trump ever say anything nasty or mean or even just call out Vladimir Putin for doing things like murdering opponents? Instead, he creates
a moral
equivalency.
How many diplomats and...
I think it's up to nine.
Nine have died mysteriously.
Yeah, diplomats and others. And,
yeah, ambassadors.
And more and more of that Russian dossier that our, again, our conservative friends, or our Trump-loving friends. I shouldn't say our conservative friends. I'm not maligning my friend Eric or other conservatives who are able to see Donald Trump for what he is. But our Trump-loving friends who say, you know, no, that dossier was a bunch of hooey, it was nonsense, and none of it was proven, and then slowly but surely they're proving it piece by piece by piece. The latest piece that came out again this past week was the dossier had referred to a specific Russian diplomat who had been supposedly coordinating the campaign, the disinformation campaign and the hacking campaign from within the United States. Mm-hmm. He was posted here. And he was mysteriously asked to leave. He got out in September of 2016 because it was getting too hot, and nobody could prove it. Nobody could identify it because there was a typo in the dossier on the guy's name. Well, they figured out the typo. Turned out, there was this Russian diplomat. He was in charge of the economic section at the embassy in Washington, D.C., who mysteriously left suddenly in a hurry in September 26, exactly as the dossier said.
Does nobody watch The Americans on FX? I mean, like, they've been here since at least the 70s. I don't understand. I mean, I wish I was kidding, actually, Eric.
I do, too.
I know. I mean, we talk about sleeper cells. But there were spies that were sent here in the 1970s, and why would we think that we are completely disentangled from a situation that was decades in the making? I mean, these kinds of battles go on for hundreds of years in other parts of the world. The fact that the United States is a young country doesn't mean that our enemies go away.
They are completely here, you know, operating. I mean, this whole Yahoo issue highlights that, and I'm sure that this is just the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing that is scary is that the way Vladimir Putin is increasing, encroaching, and continuing to move west. You know, we've talked about this before. He is trying to get, you know, back all all the countries or sovereign nations that Russia once occupied years ago. I mean, he's this is a power grab. Well, there's nothing more.
The Baltics is where I'm most concerned about today, because Putin very much wants the Baltics back. He's made that crystal clear. And so Mattis and the Europeans have wanted to station more and more troops in the Baltics as a trigger to basically say, yeah, Vlad, don't screw with this.
I think I'm glad that he's doing that. I think that's actually a really smart move on our part. And I hope that we really start to align a little bit more with Poland. I mean, for so long, we've been leaving Poland out in the cold, and they're a great ally against Russia right now.
Right. Yeah, you know what time it is now, Eric?
What time is it?
It's time for a break?
It's
time for the news.
It is time for the news, but I will say this. When you hear Roebling talk, does he sound like this?
Oh, good for you!
We're talking about politics, global politics and local politics. We are in studio with Representative Stephanie Kifowit, Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications. What's your title at Fulcrum?
I am the president.
President also, Fulcrum. Is it communications? Just Fulcrum?
Fulcrum.
Fulcrum.
Public Affairs.
Eric Elk, Public Affairs. And we have Cody Melcher is going to join us in the studio in just a moment. Roger Badish, I didn't mean to not say hi to you. It's good to see your face.
It's great to be seen and to see you guys again. Sorry.
Hi, Roger.
We got spoiled last week. Hi, everybody. Hi. We got spoiled with the cupcakes last week.
But my friend, I have Lumel
Nice. Yes, I wasn't here for the cupcakes.
I'm so sorry.
They were ridiculously good.
Did you take all the rest of them home, Patty?
No, I sent those home with, I can't remember who took them. I took the big cake.
You took the cake because we Michael were looking Heidemann. For the rest of the cupcakes.
Yes, Michael Heidemann took them home with him.
Ah, he hasn't been heard from since either.
Yes, he seemed to have left town. He's absconded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Been waiting all week to say the word abscond. We do have Girl Scout cookies, Lou Malnati's amazing pizza in studio. Yeah. We are, for whiskey and a cookie, we have some shortbread cookies and Jameson and ginger from our good friend Eric Elk. Thank you so much for providing tonight's treats. Right now it is time for our news. Here with everything you need to know is Mr. Roger Babbitt. I like thinking of all of the St. Patrick's Day revelers just tuning into WGN Radio. And, oh, there's going to be an Irish celebration. And then we launch into Russia and budget cuts and the federal interest rate hikes. I also want to thank our friends from the Tossers who gave me a lovely spot at the Metro to watch some of the great bands they're performing. It was my first time at the Metro. Have you? You've been to the Metro? You've never been to the Metro, Rep. Kifowit?
I'm from the suburbs.
But I invited you tonight, and you declined, as a matter of fact. All right. Next time, you and I.
Possibly, yeah.
In the balcony. I'm not, like, alluding to anything. Cody Melcher joins us in studio.
Hello.
Have you been to the Metro?
The club, like in Wrigleyville?
Yeah.
Yes. I saw Kyle Kinane there.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
That's a great place to do stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. And, I mean, and it's Kyle, so he works great in that venue, and also to return home for him kind of deal. So he was pretty loose there because he saw so many shows growing up there, too.
Oh, sure.
So it was great for him.
Makes complete sense. And I invited you in studio tonight on an evening when I saw you posting on Facebook, because Friday nights are when I hang out with Ken J. Kubowski, who could not join us tonight, and we're thinking about you, Ken. I hope you're having a safe trip to Michigan. Also joining us is the president of Aileron Communications, Dave Lundy. He's also a regular on Justin Kaufman's show on Monday nights, so touche, but he only gets two segments there. And here we get to stretch out a little bit and really kind of dig
two
deep.
2 hours.
A deep dive into a lot of things that are going on. And even then...
And honestly, you know, I hope Justin's not listening, but
it's
you're
different.
More fun.
It's a different segment. No, but you
it
also...
It is a different segment.
Right, and he, the way you guys are structured, you are really... Really going into conversation with somebody who just has such a polar opposite view of things, really, whether or not he supports Donald Trump is he, and this is not just liberals and Republicans. I mean, it's not just Republicans, but there are liberals who are smug, condescending, and dismissive. And I just can't. It's why I have Eric Elk on the show and not Chris Roebling or anybody of that ilk. Right. I have Elk.
Well, thanks.
That's what I do. The president of Fulcrum. And no, really, I mean, like, it's about having a conversation. That's why we stretch out for as long as we can and enjoy, you know, our company. While, and these are things that sometimes we rub people the wrong way. You know, I've been covering Springfield
Please
for the last.
Do that.
I know. Well, you know, a little more Jameson, and we'll see how it goes. But it is St. Patrick's Day. And the reason I invited Cody into the show tonight is I had never seen on Facebook just one. It was just one sentence that Mike Silver had posted, which was, that was a quick sessions.
Yes.
That's all he posted.
Yeah.
That was one sentence.
Wordplay.
Yes.
How angering.
And it was the day that we found out that Sessions had, in fact, met with two ambassadors and had lied under oath. Mm-hmm. And it was before he actually recused himself from the investigation. But there were, on one comment, there were 250 replies that had gone on for several hours.
Yeah.
And you had gotten sucked into this conversation. And I messaged you personally, privately. And I said, he's not worth your time. Stop doing this. And you told me you wanted to vent, and I said, I have a microphone for you, so come vent with us. Come hang out.
Yeah, no, I was watching a movie while a lot of that happened with two other of Michael's friends. And this was it was a gay Trump supporter who lives in West Hollywood, and then Michael Silver and two of his friends.
Dave, you seem confused by that.
No, I'm sorry, the whole gay Trump supporter thing.
Oh, we could talk. I got you want to talk gay Republicans and gay conservatives and gay Trump supporters. I got all three of those. We can talk about them. So I was watching a movie and I kept checking in, just kind of seeing what was going on. And I have a background in a lot of different political elements and rhetoric. And so I sometimes, when I get bored or tired or drunk, or all three, as this was, I just like to jump in.
Uh-huh.
And I like, because when I see poor argumentation in practice on both sides, then I just get upset.
But have you achieved a level of satisfaction when it comes to any of these? Have you seen someone turn and go, I guess you're right, or I was wrong, or I see your side of it?
Are you familiar with the book or film, Thank You for Arguing?
Smoking?
Thank You for Smoking.
Yes.
Thank You for Arguing is the rhetoric book that was written, that used that title as a means. But Thank You for Smoking. There's a moment in there where he's talking to his son about a debate about chocolate versus vanilla, and they have a mock debate. It's on a Ferris wheel. And his son says, well, but you didn't convince me that chocolate isn't superior. And he said, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm trying to convince them. Facebook argumentation is not about convincing the person you're arguing with. It's about leaving a paper trail for other people that come through so that the spectators know what the score is.
We have a different tact. On my post tonight, apparently he's not only a germaphobe, he's a germanphobe when he would not. See, okay. Thank you. Okay, so in a comedy club, that's what you do, mm-hmm. right? You just say it and leave it, right?
Right.
Now, when someone comments on it and wants to go into a diatribe, that would be like standing on a stage and someone go, well, actually, before that, no, you know what? No.
Right.
This is a joke. I'm going to leave it here. So I don't leave a paper trail. I delete those. I delete the photos of people showing me that Merkel did shake hands with Donald. Yeah, I don't need it.
Right.
It's like sitting in my living room and yelling at me while I'm in the kitchen making you dinner, mm-hmm. right? Because I've had a party and you want to be a jerk to me in my own house. And that's what sometimes my wall is like. Sometimes I'll leave the arguments up, but a lot of times I'm like, no, I'm not even going to let people get dragged into this.
Right.
See, so, I actually have an interesting thing that happens on the wall because I have a very political Facebook
presence.
Yes,
you do. And I always look for Nick and Charles.
Yes, exactly. And I have a lot of conservatives who participate in these arguments on the wall.
And in such a charming way. I mean, and not just
sometimes.
But also liberals are smug and condescending too.
Oh, of course they are. And yes. I can't stand them any more than I can stand the conservatives that are smug and condescending.
I feel like I
Eric,
should have
you're
not
fine.
Brought
Eric, that's why you're on the show, because you're not the other guy. Go ahead.
Right.
Yes.
But so what's interesting that I've seen over time is that, you know, my wife used to give me grief, and she's asleep, so she can't hear this. It's fine. But my wife used to give me grief because she would say, honey, you're posting too much, or you got too much politics in your wall or whatever.
Yes.
And then I started to have this friends who would never post. I would never see them post on Facebook. They're like, oh, God, Dave, I love your feed. I pay attention every day.
But they never comment.
I never comment.
Yeah.
But I follow
yes.
all of it. And mm-hmm. I follow the arguments. And it's exactly what you just described. Am I trying to convince Chris Roebling that he's wrong? Well, I mean, no, because I'm never going to convince him he's wrong.
But
no matter
would
how
there
wrong
be some
he is.
Satisfaction in it?
Well, I do enjoy the gotcha with Chris from time to time, and he's walked into it with me occasionally.
Yeah, we had the biggest gotcha ever on November 8th.
Yeah, we did.
That was the biggest. Like,
yeah, that was bad. A depressing night. But anyway, so I mean, I'm not trying to get you. I am all about the data. Mm-hmm. I am all about the facts. It is a fact-based world that I try to inhabit. And when you get these folks on the other side, which I'm sure is what you dealt with that one comment mm-hmm. thread and all the others, who just. They will never let facts get in the way of their beliefs.
Yes.
And we've seen that actually on your show, Patty, where we've taken callers and people have called and they said, well, that's just not true. I'm like, well, actually, according to the government statistics, that's exactly what's been happening. They're like, oh, you can't believe any of that.
Yes.
It's like what Sean Spicer did with when the unemployment rate came out. Mm-hmm. And he was asked by journalists, well, Donald Trump said it was the unemployment rate was a fraud during the campaign. He said, well, they were phony now, but they were phony before, but they're real now.
Mm-hmm. So maybe
stop.
So I apparently have different standards for what those arguments should look like. And you do both make great points because Representative Kifowit, who was nodding her head about the facts matter. There was a post when I was in Springfield and I was posting about the governor's speech and someone I just take little jabs here and there at legislators and the governor. And someone was posting, why do you hate the governor? And I asked him, I said, go through every single thing I have ever said on this show. Mm-hmm. that I have ever posted on Facebook and find the word hate for me. Because otherwise, you're just inferring it yourself. Mm-hmm. You have culled that on your own. You are putting your own on that. But there was a conversation that started and you joined in the conversation and really laid down some facts, which maybe didn't change his mind, but there was another friend of mine on Facebook who was like, thank you so much for that. So I see what you're saying, Cody.
Right.
Fine.
There's also another problem with Facebook argumentation, and I'm talking a lot about Facebook argumentation because I am working.
That's why you're here.
Well, I'm also working on a book about it, about Facebook.
Oh.
Eric, but that's a sleeper cell thing. But another problem with Facebook argumentation is in political debates with people, especially that you may not know, if like strangers that wander onto your wall or anybody on somebody else's wall.
Sure.
It ends up just kind of being one of two things. It's either a recreation of a previous debate that they've already had with you,
right,
because you don't really know what the other person's presumed knowledge is. So you end up just either educating the other person as much as you can,
right,
because you don't know what they know, or you're just basically either regurgitating an argument that you have with other people or an argument with what you presume they are. Like if I came into a debate about Donald Trump and I came in oppositional to someone that was supporting Trump at that time, they are going to automatically assume a lot about what my political stances are, what sides I fall on, who I voted for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And
without
so,
you ever even saying it,
yeah,
just
with,
based on
with
what
all
you
I,
right.
And all I may have said is like, that specific point that you made is actually fallacious. If like, it'll just be even like one point of their argument and they will automatically start arguing with me about things I've never said.
Right. Interesting. And of all of us, by the way, on the air right now, Eric Elk is the one that's most quiet, not only in studio, but on Facebook. You don't get into it with people on Facebook or in social media, do you?
No. Not going to. I mean,
you don't want to leave a paper trail, do you?
I don't. And a lot of times, I just don't feel it's worth it.
He lives a fulfilling life.
There are so many other things, you know, going on and like trying to follow it and stay on top of it. And, you know, I don't want to have someone post something that would be hateful or and have to worry about deleting it or something like that.
Oh, I just delete it. Yeah,
you know, having, you know, working for a public official years past, we would get tons of
marker.
Hate, I was going to do that. Marker.
Hate on, you know, our Facebook and, you know, on some of the social media that was just.
That was just me. Oh, sorry.
Right. I mean, it's one. I encourage, you know, I think it's good to have a back and forth dialogue, but so many folks only want to just, you know, go on like transmit and do not want to hear any other opinion.
And that's wrong. And that's what your own Facebook page is for.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Like, if you want to jump, that's why I was so, I was scrolling through and seeing over two. Well, and the other thing to be mindful of in this conversation with me and Cody and what I saw on that Facebook page was that I had asked Michael Silver to be on my show that night. And he said he couldn't because he was busy. And then I log in and I see that he's engaged in a conversation over the course of 4 hours. I'm like, really? What were you up to that you couldn't?
He was busy planning to, you know,
he was busy. He was engaged in a great civil war.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, he said he was, like you, he was busy doing something else and was going back. By the way, Michael Silver, someone who joins us for our brunches that we attend, that you have not yet been to, but Cody will now be invited as well.
He's a funny guy.
But she lives in the suburbs. I don't know if she'll join us.
Well, now that the variety show's over, my life will get a little easier.
Oh, you mean the actual variety show?
Yeah,
not the one that I'm
participating
in. Yes, Rep?
But some of it, I have a Facebook page, as everybody else does, but I let the people vent that need to vent, because repeat venters become almost powerless because they just look at the same person over and over again. But
it's a great point.
I do break in. I let my people argue on my Facebook page all the time. So you're shocked at 200, really?
250, but not like on the actual post, but on a reply to a post.
Oh yeah.
So no, underneath they, that, I'd never seen.
Oh, 250
it.
Replies to a reply.
To a reply.
Oh,
it can happen.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it can happen. I mean, it depends on what direction the reply goes, but it can happen. But I mean, the bottom line is, I let people argue on my Facebook. As long as it's civil and they're not using foul language. But the bottom line is, I interject when they're spewing alternative facts and pure falsehoods, because I don't believe that you should let falsehoods and make-believe start to become reality. So I always come in with facts and figures, and sometimes on other people's Facebook page.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I loved it. I was like, hello, Rep.
To let people know what the facts are.
Yeah. And you know what? That makes the other folks just absolutely, the steam escapes from your, when you out fact them, they don't know what to do. Because I do this all the time, and I don't just, you know, I have a general rule. I'm not going to repost something unless I can find a real source.
Right.
So I'm not going to post
something
from Daily Coast.
Yes.
Ever.
If someone dies, I better be able to see the morgue pictures. Go ahead.
I'm okay. Going to look at that body.
Or the lady that gave birth to 14 children from exactly. That they spoofed her picture.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, so, you know, I'll post original material. I'll post sources. I'll post, you know, Washington Post. And although that may be fake news to Donald, we're now learning it's not actually fake. And I'll have people on the other side post InfoWars. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no. Not real.
No.
No, Mark Levin is not real, as we know, because we're still all stuck in this wiretapping, you know, insanity from our president who read an article on Breitbart, which was really just a synthesis of something that Mark Levin said, and now we're still talking about it 2 weeks later.
But so much of what, you know, folks are posting or commenting on is all just a... You know, it's not original thought, typically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And so that's, you know, when you back that up a little bit further, they're, you know, rehashing some crazy thought that they've got from somebody that had the same tinfoil hat on they did.
Right. A lot of people are just summarizing things that they've heard in passing.
Yes.
It's a lot of opinion equals facts, facts equal opinion. And like, honestly, like just to kind of bring it back a little bit, people complain a lot about Donald Trump getting all of his news from Breitbart sometimes, but at least he's reading, you know? Can't we just be like, you know, he's getting out there.
Yeah. I think that's a good point to make. More after this on 720 WGN. Little Gaelic Storm, one of my favorite bands. It is St. Patrick's Day. Again, thank you to our friends, the Tossers, who invited us to their show tonight. I couldn't stay for the Tossers. They were playing at 11:30, so that would cut into my showtime just a little bit. But joining me in studio is Illinois State Representative Stephanie Kifowit of the 84th District. Cody Melcher, what's your title? What should I introduce? Because you've done some amazing shows. I know that you did a lot of research last summer on, was it President Jefferson? Was it? Who did you do?
Oh, that was for my play. It was a two-part Cheers and a two-part Frasier episode set during the Boston Tea Party in the John Adams administration.
Okay.
Yeah. But I wasn't really doing that much research. That's all stuff I knew way too much about already. I did do a tour of the American Enlightenment last fall for fun as a vacation.
I loved tracking that, and I wish I had been able to see the show.
Thank you. I actually fixed a National Historical Monument because they had at the Battle of Brandywine, the house that Washington was set up in, they had an item in a wrong room.
Really?
And so I let them know. They had an item that was supposed to be in the living room in the kitchen.
Does it make you crazy when you come into those moments? Because I was in D.C., and I was in the Capitol, and we were being given a tour, and it was a room of statues, and they said these are all former presidents, and one statue was of Alexander Hamilton. And I was like, and he was like, no, he was, this is before the play Hamilton came out. And I was just, I didn't want to be like a Chris Roebling. Is it Chris or is it Charles? What's his name?
Chris.
Okay. I thought it was Charles. Anyway.
No, you think of Charles Lipson.
Oh, both
UFC
of them.
Professor.
Is he also dismissive?
Don't confuse the two.
Okay. All right then.
You know, Charles is way, way less pedantic than...
We know who I miss.
Ooh, big words.
Who do you miss?
Professor Green.
I know. We all miss
him. I mean,
imagine what election night would have been with Paul. Although it would still been depressing.
Yes.
But at least...
But he would have brought some mirth to it. Yes, he would have brought some mirth to it.
Yes.
Like, he would have loved the sort of chaos of it.
And Paul would have made fun of me as I was imploding on air.
Oh, you did not look well. Would you say Eric?
Well.
Eric Elk also joins the studio. Dave Lundy.
Not well. Did not look well.
No,
not so much.
No, that was a rough evening. Where were you for election night?
I had a party at my place. Because I like to do that.
Sure. And what was
it? Was a victory party, wasn't it?
No. It was a wonk party. So we all had almanacs out and we had maps that we were coloring as we went.
I like this party.
Half the party did split off over time.
Yeah.
And then a core group stuck around to just keep drinking for a while.
I was at a tacos and Skittles party.
Oh, nice.
Actually, and we had nasty woman cocktails.
Well, until you got on the air.
And you know how I showed up? I was wearing a white pantsuit.
Oh, wow. Man, you cosplayed.
I cosplayed election night.
Oh, man.
Good stuff. And you notice there are no photos.
You know, honestly, Patty, I don't remember what you were wearing election night. I don't remember anything about election night other than I almost broke down on air.
Yeah.
And that...
It was a good evening. I know as far as that goes, you were fine on the air.
I think it was glorious.
I almost broke down on air?
No, that we had... Awesome cocktail from Knife and Tine.
Knife and Tine had some really... They had the comb over. They had the nasty woman. They had some really good drinks. Nice. Where were you, Representative Kifowit?
Well, I started celebrating my own re-election.
Yes.
Hey. And then we just kind of went home.
There you go.
And then we were like, okay. Well, and when we come back after the news, I do think we need to talk about what the, you know, President Trump has released his budget, which, as it's been explained, the more I've learned over the last 2.5 years in Springfield is that really the budget is kind of a presentation of these are our values. Mm-hmm. These are the things that we hold most important. And President Trump has presented that budget. And I don't know how many people consider that to be their values reflected, including cuts. You know, he was talking about coal miners and even Mulvaney. Mulvaney,
who, by the way, is going to instantly become infamous on Sunday when he's on the Sunday shows.
Is he going to do the Sunday shows?
That man is nuts.
Well, first of all, he said that we're not seeing any results from Meals on Wheels.
Yes.
There's no results.
Because yes, there's no proof that, any of these things
well,
work.
Well,
yeah, actually, there is.
A senior citizen surviving who would otherwise possibly starve is not a result.
Or a veteran surviving who would otherwise starve.
My World War II veteran friend, Art Johnson, really does like Meals on Wheels. Yeah. I just have to tell you, that's kind of – Meals on Wheels goes more than food.
Yes.
It's actually human contact, right. and it's wellness checks.
Right.
I mean, you have people that don't get out.
And from both sides. It's volunteers.
Right.
The food is paid for, yes.
Well, from a budgetary monetary standpoint as well, Meals on Wheels keeps those people out of nursing homes for the most part, which also, I believe I saw recently, a month in a nursing home equals 5 days a week through Meals on Wheels for, a year.
Well, you're making so much sense, and that's really not
what
we're talking
about. I hate to go again with your facts.
That's why we're going to go to the news, and Eric's going to – I have to go through Eric's list of things. I want to make sure that you don't feel like you're – just jump in. I don't know why you're waiting for us. Thank you for all the snacks, by the way. It's good stuff. We have to go to the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Join our conversation anytime. 312-981-7200. The Tossers, they probably just wrapped up a little while ago at the Metro, and I wish I'd been able to see them live on stage. They're an amazing Irish punk band celebrating St. Patrick's Day here in Chicago. Joining me in studio is Illinois State Representative Stephanie Kifowit of the 84th District. We have Cody Melcher, who's a comedian, writer, producer, talk show host, and writer of a new book that we look forward to hearing more about as he continues on that path. Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications, and a regular here on Pretty Late, as well as the Download with Justin Kaufman and some other guy he appears with. Also joining us is Eric Elk, who is a political strategist and the president of Fulcrum. And we were talking a little bit ago about the proposed budget that Donald Trump introduced earlier this week, which zeroed out a lot of different programs. Representative Kifowit, can you explain to people what it means to zero out a program?
Well, it's zero funding going to it. So sometimes when the state zeroes out a fund, we do get federal dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is if a state zeroes out a fund, there's normally matching dollars. And so that means, like we just had testimony, that next year we're going to get zero federal dollars because we didn't match any. So it just pretty much says there's no authority to spend money in that area.
And for a lot of programs, that means it, in effect, we'll eliminate those programs. The government isn't saying we're going to eliminate this. We no longer support it. It is no longer something we hold of value. And that was something that was reiterated by Mulvaney. Is his name Mick Mulvaney?
Mick Mulvaney, former congressman.
Yes, he is the director of the Office of Management and Budget, who in a press conference said that the proposed cuts, not the proposed cuts, the elimination of funding to Meals on Wheels is probably one of the most compassionate things we can do. The administration is trying to focus on both the recipients of the money and the folks who give us the money. And I think it's fairly compassionate to say to them, look, we're not going to ask you for your hard-earned money anymore, single mother of two in Detroit, unless we can guarantee to you that that money is actually being used in a proper function. Joining us on the line is Joan. When you hear something like that, that statement from the budget office, what do you think, Joan?
Oh, Patty, I am so upset. I just hope I can hold it together during this conversation because my husband and I are both recipients of Meals on Wheels. It's our only mean of one meal a day. And if they cut that, I don't have any idea of where we're going to get food, how we're going to keep ourselves nourished. if we have to sell our home and go into a nursing home. This is very, very distressing, and I can't believe that they would pick on the seniors that in this particular way. I mean, go after the people that have the money or more of the middle-class people, but leave the seniors alone. I'm 80 years old. My husband is 79. I love your show. I love you, and you are right on target with this particular subject. And I'm shaking so bad right now because if this is cut, I don't know how we're going to survive.
Joan, where do you live?
I live in, my husband and I both live in Michigan.
Okay.
And I'm going to start to cry,
I know.
Daddy.
No, Joan, don't. I'm going to find out. I want to find out what, when you, before we get off the phone together, I'm going to get more information from you. Because we may not be in Michigan, but it doesn't mean that we can't talk to the folks that serve you, that you deserve answers from the people that represent you in the state of Michigan and obviously in the United States. How long have you been receiving Meals on Wheels?
Probably about 2 years. And the fact is that we used to get some sandwiches for like an evening meal. They have cut those out. We are getting less portions on our meals, and we are getting foods that is sometimes not even edible. So it's just mind-boggling that he would come and attack the seniors that are trying to survive, trying to, just live on Medicare and take care of their own needs without having to bother the state or bother the politicians. We just want to be left alone and I'm sorry, Patty, I am really upset over this.
Joan, you are doing a remarkable job and you have no reason to apologize to us. There are people that need to apologize to you.
Well, like I said, it just, I can't understand where he's coming from. I mean, take it from somebody else, but, you know, there's going to be more, I don't even know what I'm looking for right now. I'm so upset. But the people that are going to quit receiving Meals on Wheels, I have no choice but to go to a nursing home, which we don't want to do. We're trying to stay on our own without bothering anybody. But he's forcing the elderly to do things that is going to, in the long run, cost more money and be a deterrent to the seniors.
Joan, has the people from Meals on Wheels contacted you about since the, it's only been 2 days since he released his budget. Are they already taking sort of some steps in advance of these possible cuts?
They're doing nothing.
They haven't alerted you yet as to what it might mean
ma'am.
For them?
No.
Because, you know, it is frustrating and it's terrifying and you have done a great job. You don't sound, you know, at all like that this is something that will destroy you. And we're going to do our best to make sure that you and your husband, you know, we want to make sure that you have a place to say something and also to contact those. Do you know who your legislators are in Michigan by any chance?
I'm sorry. I do not.
No. Don't you apologize. Like I said, until 2015, I didn't even know who Representative Kifowit was. just some lady behind a desk with a big green chair.
Oh boy.
It's basically the truth of it. But that's the thing, Joan, is that, you know, we go through our lives every day and there are things, and it's not that we take them for granted, but we appreciate them, right? They're the people that show up with your meals for you and your husband. That's something that, you know, you have earned, but at the same time, you're like, oh, thankfully they're here again. You know, it's Monday and they're back and Tuesday and they're back. And again, that's something that isn't taken for granted, but is something that you both earned and has been promised in a way that I think has been not just compassionate, but is necessary in the United States.
Right. Absolutely.
Joan,
I don't know. I wasn't for Obama, but I'll tell you one thing. He had it all over Trump. I didn't vote for him. As a matter of fact, I didn't even vote this year. But what he is doing is ludicrous.
I know. And actually, Michigan's one of those interesting places when Donald Trump carried the state, they actually had some numbers as to how many people voted but left the top of the ticket empty. So the fact that you didn't vote isn't necessarily unique, but it's also people voted but did not have the will, did not, could not tolerate voting for either one of them. Dave, have you seen that, those numbers? It's, I think it's like 20,000 people left the top of the ballot empty.
Yeah, I mean,
really?
And
yes. I guess I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
I would ask the question, when you were thinking about whether to vote or not, why did you decide not to vote for the top of the ticket?
I couldn't see where either one of us or either one of them would help us. And now he promised so much on his campaign trail. And one of the things was that he was going to help the seniors out, okay? He lied. He is just an absolute liar. And the bringing America back together is not his goal. I'm not sure what his goal is, but he's going to, if he's allowed to continue what he's doing now, he will turn America into a third world country. And I can see it happening with all these shootings in Chicago, and you know, we've got a lot of that here in Michigan as well. But I'm sorry, I'm just I'm.
You owe us no apologies, and you owe no one an apology. I think Eric wanted to.
Yeah,
ask
I would say part of it though is this: the president's budget is very similar in terms of the bottom line number to President Obama's last budget.
Did he zero out Meals on Wheels?
No, he didn't zero.
He said the bottom line.
The bottom
line.
I know.
I understand. So the numbers are there.
The Social Security.
He shifted things. Yes.
Social Security funding, he's not touching, for, you know, that would impact seniors as well.
Right.
There are a number of other programs that he is, you know, shifting the funds around on that.
Or cutting, proposing to cut $890 billion from Medicaid.
What does he expect the seniors to do? How does he expect them to live? There's going to be more people starving to death in America, which is totally unheard of. I mean, for 80 years I've lived I was born and grew up in Chicago, and then I moved to Michigan. But I never in my life saw anything so destructive as this man is leading us. I'm sorry.
Here's the thing. One thing I would say real quick is, remember, this is just a proposal. This has...
But Eric, I'm sorry. The proposal demonstrates, as we've mentioned before, the budget shows where you place a value. And so it's a proposal
that
will be negotiated. No.
We knew that.
No, Joan did not know that.
Election night.
No, Joan just said that the promises he made to take care of senior citizens and make sure that they were... you know, addressed and taken care of, that is not reflected in this budget. So the proposal is to eliminate a program that Joan and her husband rely on. I have to take a break here. Joan, I thank you so much for joining our conversation. I'll let Eric finish his thought when we come back, but I want to make sure, Joan, do you have anything else you want to say before we go?
Where's she at?
She's in Michigan.
I'm here.
She's in Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would encourage Joan to contact her congressman.
That's right. I'm going to get to. I'm going to.
He's probably a Republican, and he may actually have something to say about this.
I'm going to, Joan, I'm going to ask you to hold on the line for Lise and my producer, and she's going to take your information, and we will connect you with your legislators in Michigan.
Thanks, Patty, so much.
Joan, you call the show anytime, all right? We appreciate hearing from you.
We'll do that. Love your show.
Oh,
love you.
I adore you. Thank you so much, Joan. Have a great night. More after this on 720 WGN. The Young Dubliners. We are live in the Allsite Showcase studio, and we're talking to a very passionate Joan from Michigan about the Meals on Wheels programs, which have been zeroed out in the budget proposed by President Trump. And Eric, I really didn't mean to, I did. I meant to cut you off. But I wanted to table it so we could have a longer discussion about what the president's budget proposal means. You and Representative Kifowit were talking about how it's a proposal, and there will be debates, there will be some tweaking, there will be some adjustments. But this, as his budget proposal, tells us what he values, what he sees making America great again means.
Sure. Well, and keep in mind, it is his first budget.
Is that an excuse?
No, as I'm saying that, I
I'm just curious. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. try to get there, Eric.
I'm just curious.
Well, but I mean, you know, let's think about this.
Because we were told, you know, let's see what he, give him a chance.
How big you know, the budget is. And, you know, to try to get a grasp on this in the course of, what, 40-some days? I mean,
again.
And that's like the healthcare thing. No one knew healthcare was going to be this complicated.
Exactly.
Well, and there's got to be a better way.
I don't disagree, but, I mean, it has had hearings in four different committees. I think they are going a little fast. I don't agree with it at all. But the interesting thing that I thought is there's, you know, a number of Republicans until today, I think, when the Freedom Caucus basically came on board on the health care bill with, mm-hmm. with the president. But Hal Rogers, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee from Kentucky, he's from Kentucky, but on the Appropriations Committee in the Congress, basically had a comment on the budget that was not very complimentary
towards
the president's budget, mm-hmm. and basically reminded the president the Congress controls the purse strings.
So, well, that's what people say about the state of Illinois, is that, remember, the legislature is the one that controls the purse strings. What were you going to say, Dave?
Well, I just want to read a quote from Paul Ryan today, because this
ought to be good.
This is really revealing. You know, there's a lot of these folks throw, and Paul Ryan is known as a principled conservative, and he throws around his idea. I know. He throws around his ideology, and it's all a matter
his
of principles.
So
these are the things that are really important that we have to stand behind. Well, this is what he said today in an interview with the National Review. He was talking to Rich Lowry. You know, sometimes these guys get into a headspace where they think they're having a private conversation with the person and not really recognizing they're actually speaking to a public audience. He says, quote, and this is Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, said, "We've been dreaming of this since you and I were drinking out of kegs, and the dream was to cut Medicaid spending." This is what he was talking about. He was talking about the dream of Trump Care of cutting $900 billion out of Medicaid spending. I was explaining this to Eli, my 11-year-old, tonight. He's like, "Dad, you know, I don't understand. Why would they do that? What is the purpose of cutting off health care for the poor?" And I said, "Look, this is not a matter of the principle is government should not be in the business of supporting the poor. There should not be a safety net of this nature." And Paul Ryan just said tonight, "We've been dreaming of cutting Medicaid since you and I have been drinking out of kegs in college." Dude, you're drinking out of the wrong kegs.
Who wants to go? Because everyone's.
I'll go. This is the prime thing that philosophy is going to cost the state of Illinois $4 billion. And we're in a position now where if the governor has done his job for 2 years, we could actually probably be able to assess and see the damage that these federal proposals are going to do. As I said, without the budget, we've been kind of limping along on federal funding. And with the state not funding Meals on Wheels under Governor Rauner, and now the federal government not funding Meals on Wheels under this president, you know, we're going to have starving seniors that are World War II veterans, that are Korean veterans. Is this how we treat our veterans? I mean, the bottom line is we the state of Illinois is in a situation where, you know, had we had a budget, you know, this governor being the only governor in the history of Illinois that couldn't seem to get a budget passed. Now we're going to get a double whammy where other states will not.
And Cody's next. He's giving you the table.
Mine's the original point. You can take the direct to that.
So
cross.
Mm-hmm. Representative Feigenholz wants to join the conversation too. By the way,
the governor doesn't pass a budget though. The president doesn't pass a budget.
Stop.
No.
The Constitution of the state of Illinois.
And we have been going down a road for so long.
A balanced budget. Period. Full stop.
Here is.
Let me know when you're going to yell and pound the table, because I have to adjust the microphones.
Can
go ahead.
Can I pull out my political science master's in public administration hat here?
I'm turning everyone else's mics off except for Cody's. Go ahead.
That gauntlet hit hard.
The General Assembly. We pass appropriations. We pass spending authority that goes along with the governor's or the president's budget. So they go in tandem. The General Assembly, we have no authority over the checkbook. That is 100% on the executive branch. We just give authority to the spending. So the actual budget is an executive document the authority to spend is the legislature. So, yes, the budget falls under the executive branch. The authority to spend falls under the legislative
branch. Eric, your mic is back on. Go ahead.
But it takes both sides. And I to have this argument continue to go that it's and I'm not saying one is right, the other is wrong, or vice versa.
Go ahead.
You kind of are.
No. Listen, we've had one party in control of both chambers, one that had a supermajority for quite some time.
Mm.
Until 16.
On paper. Ken Duncan.
On paper.
Scott Drury.
Drury. Franks.
Jack Franks.
Jack Franks.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. You got to go local, because, my friend Cody.
Because the Democrats can't keep their people in line, I can't control that.
Oh.
It sounds like you're saying it takes a village.
I'm sorry. I have to read the Constitution.
It's not about keeping people in line. It is about
the governor shall prepare and submit to the General Assembly at a time prescribed by law a state budget for the ensuing year. Proposed expenditures shall not exceed funds estimated to be available for the fiscal year as shown in the budget. The governor has failed to do that 3 times in a row. Hashtag do your job.
By the way, from Representative Feigenholz, I can't read that on the air. Go ahead, Cody.
The governor's people in committee testified that the governor's budget is $7 billion out of balance. So they testified that it is out of balance. Political Facts called him a pants on fire
when he
sat there and said that his budget was balanced. We can look back, but every single Congress, even under Pate Phillips, Lee Daniels, Republican governors, we had a budget. We had a budget. You can say it was the most ugliest budget in the world. It might have been a little out of balance. It might have had issues. It was a budget. Right now, this governor has not done his job. He has not passed the budget. We are at the highest unpaid bills in history. In history. He
$12.8 billion.
Surpassed history. So the only historic thing he's done is tripled his salary the first year in office, over tripled our debt of unpaid bills, and
he wasn't
has
taking a salary.
And has been the is his private salary tripled. Imagine that your
his
private
income,
salary
his income
tripled.
Has his income his while income. He's been in office has tripled as a result of some of the choices
not
that he has made. When he helped lower the credit bond rating of the city of Illinois and the city of Chicago, the next day people were profiting. I know, Cody, you're like, what? My head's gonna explode.
Oh no, I'm vaguely you, aware. I know more Texas politics if you guys want to talk about Ann Richards,
the rehab in Texas.
Oh, she was great.
Yeah.
I have to take a break. I have to go to news.
Can I just say rounderbudget.com if you want to see how much time it's been since the governor was constitutionally required to propose a balanced budget? And if you want to see the daily outstanding unpaid bills balance along with the pants on fire thing, rounderbudget.com.
Who's funding that?
I also just really quick.
Not the Illinois Policy Institute.
I just
go ahead.
Say he has also made history by not being arrested and put in prison. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yet. Time now for our news. Everyone take a breath. By the way, I do want to say that the listeners are texting us about Joan in Michigan. Joan, we want to thank you for not just in the studio, but from our listeners around the country who heard your story and your passionate plea to remember that senior citizens are not out there with their hands out, but are trying to survive, trying to meet one day after the other with compassion and with love. So thank you so much for calling in. We are going to reach back out to you. We have your information, but listeners want to know if they can help you out in any way. And that's what the show is really all about. We can argue, we can debate, we can take punches at each other. Sip up. Eric, I don't care how tall you are. But right now it is time for news. Here is Roger Badish.
I've then produced me rapier, said stand and deliver, or beware of the deceiver, mush a ring, dava do dava da. Crack for the daddy o, crack for the daddy o, there's whiskey in the jar.
It's a long song. I'll go the whole time.
I'm so dazzled by this live performance. I had to miss the Tossers at the Metro tonight and having Cody Melcher sing along to...
The Dubliners, probably?
The Dubliners?
Yeah.
All right, then. Fantastic.
It's old Irish drinking songs.
And
that's
they,
how I made all my
They
friends
kind of
in
all
Sydney.
Are my friends.
I was going to say, wow, they're Irish drinking songs?
One of my favorites is by Gaelic Sturm called Don't Go for the One is one of my favorites.
I know.
We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I want to, again, talk a little bit about our caller we had in the last hour, Joan, who called from Michigan, and is a recipient of Meals on Wheels. She and her husband are 79 and 80 years old, and they have been receiving Meals on Wheels for 2 years. I want to thank her for calling in and being so brave and honest and sharing her story. It is not easy to call in when you are so passionate about something, and in particular when you rely on something that you have come to count on. And that doesn't mean you're taking something for granted and that you are expecting a handout. And I want to say that there are legislators that I know of in the state of Illinois that would be more than happy if we just took away all social services and reverted it back to charities. And so when people volunteer and they want to donate money, and yes, and the people who have volunteered and want to send something and start a campaign for Joan, I think that's a great idea. But I think there is a danger in that when we do step up, and we should step up for our neighbors, and we should be doing it not when the government fails us, but because we are compelled by the need to help each other. It should always be there. We should always want to help those who are most vulnerable. And I think that when we say, well, I'm going to help, you should always feel that way. And when we say, well, let's just take it away and someone will take it over, that's dangerous. And that's why I'm hesitant to say, well, someone like Joan is going to be okay because her neighbors will take care of her. And that's where I mm-hmm. really worry about someone like Paul Ryan, someone like the President of the United States, who says, we want to get rid of these social services. Someone else will take care of it, and they should. Mm-hmm. Joining me in studio is Representative Stephanie Kifwit. And on the line is Representative Sarah Feigenholtz, who just couldn't take it anymore and also feels passionately about our caller from the last hour. Hi, Representative Sarah. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hi, everyone.
Did you want to say hi to Eric Elk in particular?
Hello, Representative.
Eric trying to do the backstroke. He lives in my district. He has a heart and a soul. So I know he was having a tough time defending that budget.
I'm trying.
Yeah. You know what? I got your number, buddy.
Oh,
that's
no,
small
I'm in trouble
R after
I'm
your name.
it's well, and that's the thing, is that the R, and that's why Eric is on the show every week, because he does feel strongly about the ideals that the Republican Party represents. And I think that we need each other, and we need the Democrats, we need the Republicans, we need the independents, that's what this has all been about. I was thinking about, look, my son loves the movie 1776 and the play and the compromise
that.
And something that Representative Kifwit and Representative Feigenholtz have talked to me about a lot in the last few weeks is that the part of negotiations is that a good deal is one where everyone walks away losing something. Mm-hmm. Yes. You never walk away getting everything you wanted.
Right.
And that
right.
was true in 1776 when we declared our independence from England. There were Southern representatives who wanted to maintain slavery, and some of the Northerners did not. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know what, this is an argument we will come to later. And it was wrong. It was wrong that they did that, and we have to have the presence of mind as people today going, as historians, as we all should be, and say that was wrong. But in order to make that declaration, we had to make that compromise.
Yes.
Otherwise, we would not have moved forward. Go ahead, Rep. I'm sorry.
But I want to talk a little bit about Meals on Wheels and the history of Meals on Wheels and some of the programs that we do have. Many of them are designed to be, somebody mentioned it earlier, cost containment measures. So
that,
for instance, people living at home, instead of them going into a long-term care facility, they can stay in their homes, age in place, in community-based, and get community-based services. And it costs a quarter of what it would cost to be prematurely institutionalized where they don't belong, simply by virtue of giving them a little bit of help at home and some food. And we are the richest country in the world. We have a surplus of food. Food is, our food programs, our SNAP programs, they are not designed for poor people. They were born of the Johnson administration, and they were about nutrition, not about need. So this is penny wise and pound foolish. Do I think there's any legislator in Congress or in the Illinois legislature that will ever push a button supporting a cut on Meals on Wheels? I don't think so.
Except
go ahead.
I was going to say, Sarah, except it's Dave. Except that of course, that's not the button they'll push. They'll push a button that's going to be something obscure called community development block grants, and they'll cut those, not recognizing that what they're really cutting is Meals on Wheels.
You're okay. I'll stand corrected. You're right. But as I said earlier, Eric, you know, your hesitation to defend this budget probably is because you know better, because you know that this is a cost-saving measure. It is absolutely, I feel like we're all living in the twilight zone when we see some of this. Even from a neutral economic position, this makes no sense.
I'm sorry. Are you talking about the Trump budget? Because I don't support it.
I think you're more. You were arguing that this was just a proposal. This is the first go around.
Yeah.
As though it's okay.
Yeah.
It comes across that way, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think it's nice to scare senior citizens.
No.
I think it's lovely what's going on. I have great pride with this president.
Oh no.
Nothing like sitting on the phone and listening to one of our octogenarians in this country almost cry in front of America.
Not at all. All I was trying to say
was that... Isn't that nice?
No.
Okay, good.
All I was trying to say was this was just but a first step. It had a long way to go, and hopefully that would not happen.
Okay. But to Sarah's Representative Sarah's point, and what Representative Kifwit has been talking about as well, is in this. So because I'm in this, no, Eric, because you haven't been in this situation, I will be completely honest with you. This is why I started showing up in Springfield on World Autism Day in 2015, is because when you say I'm going to take away funding for the autism program of Illinois, what families like mine see is, and it happened immediately. The doors to Easter Seal were locked, and parents who had children who were in social skills classes were told we have to cease this program because the funding was cut. It is a state of emergency, and that was what you heard in Joan's voice, and that's what Sarah is calling you to task on and saying that we can talk about the process. But it is a very real, and it's an impending situation where we are always in crisis. We are always in a state of emergency. And so when you tell us, you know what, this isn't really what's going to happen. It's not that. You don't know what's going to happen next. That you're not listening to what, you know what I'm saying? That's what Sarah, Representative Sarah,
yeah,
is talking about.
I'm sorry.
Thanks for translating, Patty.
You're welcome.
That was not what I was trying.
It was us. You were talking to us and not Joan.
Yeah, and
so I understand that. No.
I will say, during the break, Eric and I did have a long conversation because I was talking a lot about that politicians tend to focus on numbers and dehumanize the actual effects, like they're actual human beings, and these aren't just political pawns that are being moved on a chessboard.
Yes, you did.
And Eric,
right,
and I were having a conversation about this, and Eric was saying, yes, it is, and I don't want to, you know, put Eric's words out for him, but Eric was saying, yes, it is easier for politicians to not have to put a face to them because they have to do that. And then that's why we get to the point now where,
right,
we have politicians not going to town halls.
Right.
And then so far as to call town halls false and to say that they are not in their jurisdictions and they're people coming from out of state and paid protesters, etc.
Well,
it's easier for them to make these decisions. And I'm not saying that it's a good thing. I'm saying that these are deals with the devils that they have decided to make that I think personally is why we get to situations like Donald Trump saying that trans rights should revert down to the states,
right,
without thinking about that these are human beings that need to be thought about and children that need to be thought about, or how Donald Trump decided not to do anti-gay legislation or executive orders, and people told me that means he's pro-gay, as if not destroying gay lives means that you're the most pro-gay,
right,
person you can be.
They need to be called. They need to be called out on that, and they need to be held accountable.
Can I just make one point, though, about this whole social service issue? Because I think there's a little understood fact that really affects people like Joan and the Meals on Wheels programs and all of these social service agencies. It's not just a matter of flipping a light switch and turning the programs on and turning the programs off.
Right.
It's this concept in the nonprofit,
yes,
world is called capacity building.
Mm-hmm.
And if you deprive these agencies, if they cut 50% of their staff, they can't just flip the switch and bring
them
back.
They don't come back. They do not,
right,
come back.
Because the people who do these Meals on Wheels delivery, they get to know the people. It's, as we were talking about earlier, it's wellness checks. It's mm-hmm. human communication and interaction. And when you eliminate that, you eliminate the ability of these people to actually deliver, these agencies to deliver services. And you can't just turn that back on. That's going to take a long time to rebuild.
Okay, let me take, I know that we have Anthony on the line as well, but Ted first before the break. We have Representative Sarah Feigenholtz on the line, Representative Stephanie Kifwit in studio, Cody Melcher, Dave Lundy, and Eric Elk. Ted, what did you want to say?
Hey, Patty, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, about the being nervous about government being completely out of the Meals on Wheels, you know, or any of these other programs, or however you mentioned that. I could see from my own experience, just had this happen in my own neighborhood, where basically it was the mail lady who ended up calling the fire department or to get the ambulance out because she noticed somebody she was delivering to, and suddenly it's like, man, I'm tight in my chest. Guy lives by himself. But that was the community, basically. I mean, it happened to be the mail lady, but you know, people in the community looking out for each other. So it isn't right. all going to rest on government's hands. And the thing mm-hmm. that really, I'm telling you, it's really disingenuous that someone says, hey, we cut, you know, the government's going to cut Meals on Wheels and it's going to die. The government is like the fifth largest contributor to the Meals on Wheels. It's something like 3.5% or 4%. If Meals on Wheels is going to go down because of that amount of money, then there's other problems that are involved there, like maybe the salaries involved for running that thing. You
well,
can't
Ted,
be scaring people
Ted,
on that side.
No, no, no. But Ted, the one of the things that they have found with this financial situation and the proposed cuts is that it would slash it by half. So senior citizens who are receiving one meal a day would be receiving. If they're receiving two meals, they would go down to one meal a day. So this is something that's coming from Meals on Wheels. So it's not something that we're trying to terrify people. Meals on Wheels has said this is where they are. This is what it would mean to them. So we thank you so much for your conversation. You're right. Neighbors have to look out for each other. We have to take a break here, and we'll take Anthony's call when we come back on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We might get a little hot under the collar, but we're all still good friends, including Representative Feigenholtz and Eric Elk in the
I
studio. You have been so
Eric.
kind to call in. And Representative Stephanie Kifwit, who's been in studio tonight. It's her first time on the show in studio, so we're so thrilled that you came down tonight. Also, Cody Melcher joins us for his very first Freak Out Friday.
I'm loving it. I'm freaking out and I'm feeling good.
Well, and to our last listener who was, I think, alluding to we're making people worry. The thing is, as I mentioned earlier, families like mine are in a constant state of emergency. So when you put us in a precarious position and say, this is going away. And by the way, you know, people can say that I was overreacting or wasn't going to be that bad. There are services that my son, who has what's called hypoplasia of the corpus callosum, which means a part of his brain is missing. He is significantly disabled, is physically challenged, emotionally challenged, cognitively behind. There are services we have not received, and we didn't even realize it until 3 weeks ago. For 18 months, he has gone without an ABA therapist, and that was entirely because of the cuts that were made in the state of Illinois. We've compensated by other things. We go on, we dig in, we dig deep, and we do what we have to do. And then when we have a social worker come into our home to see how we're doing, because there are other services we might be eligible for, but we can't get them, but yet they're still there. And she goes, well, are you getting this? And we're like, no. How about this? We're like, no. And that's when we realize, oh, right, that all went away. And the backslide that Declan has experienced, we'll never know. We'll never know what potential might have escaped him in the last 18 months. So that's all I wanted to say to that caller. Anthony wanted to join the conversation. Yes, Anthony, what would you want to say?
Well, first of all, Patty, I'm truly sorry that your son is not getting the care and things that he needs. As a taxpayer and a working person, you're the last individual I'd like to see have anything cut from your budget.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to find out, you know, we have to make cuts somewhere. We cannot just keep, you know, increasing people's taxes. I just, you know, I hear all the things that you don't want to do, but yet I don't hear anything from the Democrats on what they will cut. You know what I mean? You gotta get the scissors out and start making some cuts. How about we go and find out a list of people who are in the second, third, and fourth generation of being on welfare.
Oh, Anthony, it's good to hear from you again. I actually mentioned you, Anthony. I actually mentioned you off the air. Actually, you usually say fourth and fifth generation of welfare recipients.
You moved it up.
Yes. Yeah. No. But he scaled it back, and I appreciate that. You have said that before.
Yeah.
No. Go ahead. I'm gonna go and let Representative Kifowit answer your question.
Well, Anthony, I thank you for calling in and taking up this big issue. One of the things that I think a lot of people fail to realize is that the federal government makes us spend money. And right now, under court orders and federal government, we are spending all our money. And what has been cut, I can tell you exactly what's been cut, is universities have been cut 67% 2 years ago and an additional 49% last year. Domestic violence shelters have been entirely cut. They haven't gotten any money. And so aside from mandatory spending, everything else has been cut. They've had no money.
I want to address, I don't know if either one of you or anyone in the studio can address, because Anthony does have this. It's his go-to. When we talk about memo talking points, Anthony and callers like him have mentioned fourth and fifth generation welfare recipients, welfare queens. Does anyone have anything to say to that? Because it is mythology. It is something that we allude to and say, well, they're taking from us. Mm-hmm. Why don't we fight for them to have better lives rather than seeing that as someone who is taking something from you?
Well, first, I think we got to talk about who's on welfare. And Anthony, believe it or not, the majority of people on welfare are frail, elderly, and disabled individuals. About 10%, which you can call is the able-bodied welfare recipient. And believe it or not, about 60% of those people are working. Unfortunately, they're not making enough money to get out of poverty, but they actually are working. And so what we believe is to rise people up, which is through child care, which is through really a Republican principle back in the day, which is welfare to work. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, with Governor Rauner, he slashed child care and he slashed programs which would help people to get out of the welfare cycle. So I'm with you 100%. We have to get people who are able-bodied out of the welfare system and into good jobs through programs, through college, through training. And I think we can do that. But until Governor Rauner does his job and we get a budget, we're just in a standstill.
Right.
And everything is completely at a standstill. Last year,
it is Anthony. By the way, Anthony, I heard that disparaging right. sort of tone of that. Yeah, mm-hmm. It actually is now. It is now officially.
In fact, in a Senate here,
responsible for Illinois having the worst credit rating in the country.
Yeah,
he is.
He's directly responsible for this.
He had six downgrades in 2 years.
Yes, he did.
That's the most any governor has had.
Mm-hmm.
But the other day before a Senate committee, his budget director was asked, because Governor Rauner has said, I want the authority to make all the cuts. And his budget director was asked, okay, you want the authority to make the cuts. Do you people have a list of cuts that you would make? And the answer from the governor's Office of Management and Budget Director was, no, we don't have a list of cuts. The governor is a coward on this issue. He refuses to take responsibility for what he would propose. And he, as I said earlier on the show, he's constitutionally required to do so and has failed to do so.
His department heads have said on the record they cannot cut anymore.
Right.
On the record, they have said that.
Harold.
As far as the Medicare, Medicaid queens, I would say a lot of that was wiped out in the early to mid-90s with President Clinton and the Republican Congress.
But you're a Republican. How can you say that the welfare queens were... You don't believe
Eric is
that?
A semi-fact-based Republican.
Hold on. Before I turn the show over, I have to take Harold's call. Harold, what do you want to say?
Hey, sorry. I'll try to be as quick as I can.
You don't have to apologize. It's my fault.
No problem.
And these guys with their yapping.
a few weeks ago, I've heard interviews with people who voted for Trump, and they're still staunch supporters of Trump. But they're like, the Affordable Care Act saved my life. And they're like, well, you voted for Trump. Well, I believe in a lot of things he said, and I agree with it. But this Affordable Care, it's like, well, you can't have it both ways.
No.
I'm starting to think, anyways, that Trump didn't begin as a Republican, and I think he joined the Republican Party because he wants to undermine the Republican Party. I mean, look how many people have jumped on board. Oh, yeah, it's cool. This is the best thing in the world.
You think he's trying to destroy the Republican Party from the inside?
They're doing a good job on their own.
I've always been thinking that he just wanted, you know, he's just out for himself. But I'm starting to wonder. I'm like, he does such crazy things, and people just go jump on board with him. And I'm thinking, is he trying to undermine them and basically destroy that party from the inside?
Interesting point. I like that, Anthony. Harold, hold on a second. Yes, Cody?
Yeah, I heard that theory a lot during the election. There was that, or there was he was an agent of Hillary Clinton so that she could win the election. It's an interesting conspiracy theory because we are puzzle solvers as human beings, and we love to do that kind of stuff. But if he is trying to destroy the Republican Party, first of all, as was said, they're doing that enough, and they don't really need somebody to be a catalyst. No. And second of all, apparently he has Wonder Years himself and is stuck there because he's like, if he's trying to destroy it, he apparently is not doing a good enough job. And it's not, I mean, I almost like to believe that because I like to think of Donald Trump waking up every day and saying, like, what's the worst thing I can do to try to make this happen? And he keeps doing it, and it still is okay. And he's just like, what am I going to do?
I'm sorry. I'm going to turn the show over. Harold, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Before I give Representative Feigenholz and Representative Kiffewit the last word, I'm not sure what I'm looking at, but there's a picture of Esmeralda Leon in a snuggle blanket before she comes and does her show. She and Hannah Stanley are coming in studio. They're filling in for Matt Bubala. Representative Kiffewit, final words.
I just want to remind people that Crane Chicago revoked their endorsement of Rahner. Just keep that in mind. And their quote was, by every measure, the state is worse off than before he became governor. Therefore, there were problems, but now there were. So when Anthony says, well, everybody's blaming Rahner, well, when Crane Chicago revokes an endorsement, it is time for the governor to do his job and actually be the governor of the whole state.
Hashtag do your job.
There you go. Representative Feigenholz.
I can't top that.
I miss you. I'm giving you guys a timeout. I cannot go to Springfield for a while because y'all making me nuts, just so you know. I'm not going down there for a while. I just can't take it. I'm going to Fort Bliss next week. I'm going to be going down there for the Warrior Games with the Department of Defense and really some veterans who have given their most. And I look forward to working with them for that week. So, Representative Feigenholz, how can people find you?
They can find me at State Rep Sarah is my new Twitter handle.
Excellent. Yay. Representative Kiffewit?
I'm at Rep Kiffewit, and I'm also on Facebook, Stephanie Kiffewit. And then I have ildistrict84.com is my state website.
Excellent. Cody?
You can find me at Cody Melcher ESQ on Twitter, CodyMelcher.com, and also my podcast about weird and messed up books called Tome Foolery. It's like Tomfoolery with an E, because it's
right.
A pun.
I love it. Dave?
Well, if we're doing Twitter handles, you can find me at Dave CHGO, Dave Chicago CHGO.
You're like me. We had to figure out something there.
Exactly.
Eric?
At Eric ELK.
Excellent. Have a great night, everybody. I'll talk to you all next week. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Up next, Hannah Stanley and Esmeralda Leon. They couldn't come in. It was too crowded. I made a mess. I'm so sorry, everybody. Here with your news is Roger Badish.